Morning, Tracy. How are you?
Morning. I'm doing okay.
On this yeah. Dingy day.
No, the worst day ever.
Down in Borsey Green, but it's an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me.
So if we can just have a little bit of an introduction to yourself for people that don't know you. Tell us a little bit about you and summarise.
My name's Tracy Patterson. I was married to Barrington Patterson. And since Barrington's passing, I've been still trying to continue with his work that he started in the community.
Fantastic. So let's go back. How did you meet Baz and how did you describe your life away from the spotlight and the blues and stuff like that? And tell us a little bit about that.
We actually met in a shop. Believe it or not, it was nowhere fancy. Barrington's friends got a shop in town, and Barrington's friend was a friend of mine. So I went in there one day to buy something, and we chatted, and I thought nothing of it, and I left. And then the next thing, my friend phones my phone and says, oh, somebody here wants to speak to you, and he puts Baz on the phone, and he's like, oh, you gonna let me take you out to dinner? I was like, no. So this went on for a while. He'd phone me off his friend's phone because I wouldn't let him have my phone number. And in the end, his friend went, he's doing my head in, like wearing out my battery, running up my phone bill, because years ago, you paid for how long you spoke for. He's gone, let him have your number. I was like, well, no, because like he might be like one of these people that become a pest, and I'm very like guarded. So this went on for weeks. And in the end, I said, all right, give him my number. So then he's phoned me. I've gone, I will come out for lunch, but it's daytime. I'm not coming in the dark. He's like, what do you think? I'm a madman. I'm like, no, I'll meet you.
It weren't down the blues then?
No, definitely not. I was like, I'll meet you somewhere at lunchtime. I'll drive myself and I'll drive myself back. And he's like, oh, I'm all right then. So anyway, we've gone for lunch. And it was our very first date. And I bought him 24 raw blue roses, which completely floored him because nobody has ever done anything like that for him. So that like took him back. And then we've come out from lunch. I've gone, right then, see, I'm going home. He's like, we're not having coffee or nothing. I said, no. So this went on for weeks and weeks. And like, I was self-employed, I was busy. And he's like, oh, when we're going to do lunch again? So we did lunch again. And this went on for about, and then the one time we wanted to go out, and he's gone, oh, why don't you leave your car at home? And like, we'll have a drink. And I thought, yeah, he only wants to know where I live. Like, very guarded.
He's very cynical at this time.
Very guarded still. So I said, yeah, that's fine. I'll get a taxi and I'll meet you there. So anyway, we've gone out for a drink. We've met up with some of his friends. And at the end of the night, he's gone, oh, I'll drop you home. I thought, how am I going to get out of this one? So I said, yeah, that's fine. So I'm directing him, but I'm taking him through all the lefts and the rights so he hopefully don't remember.
Blindfolding.
Yeah. So then I've got him to drop me on the next street to where I live and pretending to go up someone's path.
Oh, like the Only Fools and Horses.
Right.
Yeah.
So for weeks and weeks, he thought I live there. So then my friend was going, yeah, but if this like progresses, are you going to break it to him that you've been having him drop you outside somebody's house for weeks? And I've gone, I don't even know, like, I'm not even thinking about things like that. So it went on for, like, a good while. And then my son, who was, like, in his 20s at this point, was like, Mum, you know, when am I going to get to meet him? And I'm like, I'll tell you what, we'll all go for dinner. So then we're out having dinner and my son's gone, you're coming back to ours, Baz? I thought,
think fast.
But, like, I'm thinking he's going to know I don't live where I've been getting him to drop me for however many weeks. So this just turned into, like, the biggest, like, drama that was not supposed to happen. So anyway,
she's just trying to delay the dinner then. She's like, should we have another coffee and have another drink?
I'm, like, thinking, oh, so we're going back and Basley's thinking he knows the way now to mine because he's dropped me at this house a few times. And my son's gone, oh, no, Baz, should have took a left there. He's gone, no, where I'm going. I'm thinking, you don't.
You actually don't.
So we've pulled up, like, outside mine, and my son's gone, yeah, Baz, pull on the drive and that. So Baz is looking at me as if saying, look, is this your son's house? Like, I thought, I can't even get away with that. And saying, look, it's my son's house. So, look, we've got in the house and that. My son's gone off doing talking on the phone. And he's gone, who lives here? Said, I do. Said, you're joking? I said, no, I said, I didn't really want anybody to know where I live. You've got to be careful, you know, people can turn into raving lunatics. Mm-hmm. But he found it hilarious. And he, for years and years, he told everybody that story. Brilliant. That she had me parking up outside somebody else's house. I bet the woman that lived at that house for, why do they keep parking outside my house? And then when he drives off, she goes running down the road like, what?
Did you ever see the curtains twitching?
She must have thought, like, are they mad? Like, she must have thought we were having an affair or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's dropping her ear and she's running back to... No, I just don't want
to... I thought you was going to say you went even further and knocked on the door and said, can we just use your living room for our...
I had to, like, go halfway up her drive. You know, because he was sitting in the car on the phone and I'm thinking, you need to get off that phone.
Yeah, you're like,
then I got my phone out and started messing with it. You know, like, because he just wasn't moving. On
playing Snake.
Thinking, doom scrolling. Yeah. Rumpel off.
Am I going to have to just go to right to this door now? Yeah.
But he put that story. I'm sure that story is in his book.
Oh, brilliant.
He took up a few of our stories for his book.
Yeah.
So how then do you the relationship build, and how does football and kind of his life around football come into that?
I knew of him, but not, you know, that side of him. Regarding his history with the football when he was younger. And so my friends are like, I can't even believe you were seeing him, you know. And I'm like, he's really not how he's portrayed to be. Either that or I'm missing something, because I'm very smart, as you know. I've made him park somewhere else for months. So I'm not the kind of person that would rush into bringing somebody to my house, you know, even though my son was an adult at this point. But I'm still very careful. And they're like, no, have you seen the video of him doing this or the video of him doing that? Have you seen the Danny Dyer thing? That had just not long come out.
Oh, wow.
When we met. So.
Oh, that was massive, wasn't it, at that time?
Yeah. So, like, when we started going out more and people were like, can I have a picture? And, you know, that solid of things. He never, ever said no. He'd always be like, yeah, you know, people would come up and put newborn babies in his arm for a picture. And I thought, wow, this is like, we're two different people. I'm very private. You'd never, even after we got together and we were planning our wedding and whatever, you'd never see me all over the internet, and my account's always locked. I'm very guarded. Baz used to get invited to some amazing things. I'm not the kind of person that would turn up to the opening of an envelope. I'll go if it's to do with Baz and it's probably a film premiere and he's had a small part and the book signing, we went all around the country promoting his book, and I loved doing all that because it was for him. But sometimes he'd get invited to places just so that they could have him there.
Yeah.
Then I wouldn't go, because it's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm be at home in my PJs.
Mm. Bit laddie because he's there and he's a bit of a lad down the blues and stuff.
I like to be very private with regards to that. And I don't, I'll promote his book and anything that he's in, or give it the full max and promote it to the death and support him in that way. But going to like boxing events and stuff like that is really not.
Would you say that it was polar opposite then what he was like as the family man and what he was like as the public figure then, that he said he didn't really realise what he was like, and he portrays this kind of tough man when he's out and about?
But other people portrayed it more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than he did. Because at home, he liked nothing more than on a Sunday getting the ironing board out and getting a whole heap of ironing out, putting his tunes on and doing the ironing. And I used to sit there thinking, if all them people could see you now standing there in your shorts doing the ironing on a Sunday. But that's how he was. He was very down to earth. And I think other people built him up. He was never bolshy or big-headed. And he was very humble. Like, where I say, like, people go, oh, can I have a picture? Or people had contacted him on Facebook and say, oh, it's my dad's birthday and he's not well. And he'd love it if you could pop round for a cup of tea. He'd be like, yeah, hang on. Send me your number. And then someone, he'd give me the phone. I'd go, all right. And they'd go, yeah, as he's coming round to have a cup of tea with my dad, this is the address. Can you tell me what day you're coming? And I'd be like, yeah, yeah. And I'd look in his diary and I'd go, we can do like Sunday afternoon. And they'd be like, yeah, fabulous. And you do that. And I've got the whole family there. But they loved that. And he loved that. So, you know, to give a couple of hours out of your day without expecting anything in return is really important.
Yeah.
And he always remained humble. You know, you see these videos online of young kids getting bullied at school and people would film it and they'd put it online. He hated it because he was bullied at school as a child due to having, well, not having one eye, but being blind in one eye. And he spoke about that in his book.
Yeah.
How it affected him. And, you know, they used to call him Cyclops and he hated all that. So when he used to see these videos of a load of kids dragging a girl around the floor and filming it, he'd like go, Mrs. P, I need you to find out who this girl's parents are. He's like, I need to go and speak to her because we need to let her know that there's more good people in the world than there is bad. So I'd be like asking people, does anybody know like who this girl's parents are and, you know, can we speak to her? And then he'd be like, now we need to go and buy her gifts and we need to go around there and we need to tell her that, you know, don't let this define the rest of your life. What they've done to you says more about them than it does you. You might have been the victim and you might be feeling embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the worst embarrassment is going to come to the people that have filmed it and put it online. So he engaged a lot with that side of the young people and trying to, you know, like give them confidence after something
that could,
like,
yeah, that could be life-changing, couldn't it? Like, or it would be life-changing.
You know, and then the parents would be ringing going, you know what, she's got up this morning, she's gone to school. You know, he didn't just visit them once, he followed it up, you know, to make sure that it's just not a one-hit wonder and I've popped around your house. He'd follow it up and make sure that, you know, that they're still feeling confident. And so he did a lot of things that people didn't know about.
Well, but I hear lovely things about him because I know some of the lads that still, Keith and Ryan, who we had on the other week and stuff, and they're just full of praise and throughout the years. Did you... So when you look back at his journey from kind of from the violent side, going down and having a fight down the blues every week and stuff, to being that community leader, kind of what do you feel the most proud of that journey there? Because it could have gone another way, couldn't it?
I'm fully aware of that. If he didn't turn his life around when he did, the news headlines would have been different on the day that he passed.
Yeah.
I'm fully aware of that. I think the defining moment for him was we were invited out by our friends at Midland Langa, the Sikh community, who cook and serve food every night in Birmingham city centre. And they invited us to go out and serve food with them. So we've met them on a Tuesday night and it's freezing cold and there's a massive queue down the road, probably 120 people queuing for hot food. So we're there serving them. And then this guy's come up in the queue and I could see Baz looking at him like this. And then the guy's going, Barrington, Barrington. And it was a school friend of Barrington's who had, he was in his class all through school and he'd fallen on hard times. He was homeless. He had addiction issues. And that really, really affected Baz. So Baz was saying, wait till I finish doing this. I want to speak to you. So at the end, they chatted and Baz was like, come on, you know, I can't leave you out here in the cold. It's freezing and, you know, you've got no proper footwear and whatever. He's gone, I'm going to get you into some accommodation tonight and I'm going to contact some people tomorrow. But to go into addiction therapy, you need to want it yourself, not just do it because somebody else wants you to do it. You want to change your life and turn your life around. So he's like, yeah, I will. So we got him into a travel lodge and he was there like a couple of days while we tried to get him some sort of addiction support, which is really difficult because the waiting lists are like horrendous. And to pay privately, it's like 1,200 quid a day. And
why?
So that it would never be an option. And most people that go into rehab come out and fail.
Relapse.
And they have to have a couple of goes at it before they finally get to where they need to be. So then he's gone. Just going up there and feeding the people wasn't enough. He's gone, I've got the platform where we can raise awareness and get coats, sleeping bags, gloves, thermals, care packages. We can get someone to come in and look at their feet during the winter. They get trench foot. They're walking around all day in wet socks. Then of a night time, the temperatures are dropping, so they're footwear's freezing, and then their toes are in real bad condition. So he's gone, I'm going to use my platform to raise awareness and help people bring like donations of sleeping bags and whatever to us. So he did that and it went absolutely like wild. There's people going, can I volunteer? So we had the same five or six volunteers from the day that we started, and we kept them same people. But occasionally we'd have like a guest volunteer, just bring somebody out from Jaguar Land Rover who wants to come and see what we do. And then they'll go back and they'll do like a Christmas drive where they'll get people to bring in socks, sleeping bags. Yeah. And that's how it built up. Then we got a unit down by Tyburn Road so we could start prepping for the winter months and prep in advance. And we managed to fill that up. And then every Tuesday we'd go out. They knew we'd be there at 6 o'clock. You'd come and get new sleeping bag, you'd get a coat, boots, care packages with wipes and essentials, little care package with like snacks and whatever in. And we did that and it just got bigger and bigger and we did it with no funding. And then some weeks, we ain't got no stock. And Baz was like, oh, we'll just have to go shopping. Or no, we're going to be there at 6 o'clock. Like,
right.
We need to...
The reliance.
Whether you've got stock or not, they know we're going to be there. So we need to be there.
It's a big responsibility that is, isn't it?
It is.
Did you feel the weight of that responsibility?
He was working full time. Mm-hmm. I'm still, you know, self-employed and trying to juggle answering a million text messages, Facebook off Baz's account and trying to juggle all that, but still like get out there at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday and make sure everybody's got what they need. But there's been times where we've still got people in the queue and we've run out of stock. And then this one guy, and I'll never forget him. I've seen him since recently. And he came to the front and we had no coats left and it was snowing. So Baz just took his coat off and gave it him. And one of the volunteers went, Baz, like, that's not your coat. He's gone, listen, I'm going home with my wife to my warm house. I'm going to have a hot shower and get in my warm bed. Said he's out here all night, probably sleeping in that multi-storey car park. So he needs that coat more than I do. And then a few months ago, I was at an event and I kept looking at this guy that was there. And you know, when you look at someone and you think, oh, I can't even...
Complies, were you?
Where I know you from. And I was looking at him and then he kept looking at me and I thought, I'm sure he must know me because he keeps looking at me, or is he looking at me because he thinks I'm somebody else? So anyway, he's come over, he's gone, Tracy, I don't know if you remember me, but your husband, Marinson, very kindly gave me his coat. Right. He was crying. I was crying. But you know, and you just look at someone and like, you think, but because he changed so much from that time where we seen him in the queue, he looks different. He's
for the better.
Yeah. He's got his own accommodation. He's got a job. You know, like, I thought I knew him and then I couldn't understand. And I thought, yeah, one of the homeless, like, because if he is, what would he be doing in here? But I was very wrong because he was that guy.
Yeah.
So there was people that you meet along the way that stick with you and you often think, I wonder how they're doing. Because they're homeless people come and go. You don't see the same people every week. They move on.
So just going back slightly then, at the time, was that kind of a bit of a sliding doors moment for you, for Barrington? I assume that you wasn't doing the naughty stuff down the football at the time, or was that a crossover?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And since the Danny Dyer thing, obviously his platform was much bigger. And then his book coming out, that sent it up again. And then he just said, you know what? I could use the platform that I've now got with these thousands and thousands of people to do good in and give back to the community. And he always used to say, I'll give back to my community more than I ever took. And he always used to say that. So then he started, obviously, knife crime in Birmingham. At that time was just...
On the rise.
It was getting really bad. And he started going into schools, but he wasn't going into mainstream schools. He was going into schools where they deemed the children not good enough to go to mainstream school. And they had them all at this unit. So he'd go there and he'd speak to them about it. Certain things that you do in your life will prevent you doing things. Like now you might think it's big and clever, but when you're in your 20s and 30s and you want to travel and you've got a ban because you've got conviction, some countries you can't get in, it will prevent you from getting a job because they're going to have a CRB check and all of those things. And then he used to explain that the things he did had have affected him in his older life. So in his way, that platform, he wanted to use it for the better. Like he'd get parents contacting him on private on Facebook going, you know, Baz, I found a knife in my son's bedroom. I'm a single mum. He's not listening to me. And Baz says, like, send me your address. I'll be around tonight. 6 o'clock. Keep him in because I don't want to be driving around looking for him, because if I have to drive around looking for him and find him with his friends, I'm going to embarrass him. So I tell him it's better he waits in the house and speaks to me. And he always never just did a one visit. He always followed up. And she's like, oh, you know, Baz, he's going to school now. He's getting up in the morning. And like, when he seen the difference that he was making, he obviously wanted to do it more. So then he started going into prisons, massive security checks and jump through hoops to be able to do it. But then he used to say to me, oh, I'm not going to be very good at this public speaking. And I go, why not? He's like, well, I haven't really done it. And I go, well, we'll practice. Like, I'll sit here and I'll talk to you and ask you things and you tell me what it was like and, you know, growing up doing the things that you did and not glorifying it, but then explain how it went on to ruin some parts of your life. That, you know, he auditioned for Gladiators and got through and then they wouldn't have him because he had a CRB check. But he was never, ever convicted of football violence, but is down as a Zulu.
Notorious.
And whether you're convicted or not, if you're down as it, you're down as it, and it's very difficult to remove it.
Stigmatised.
So it does prevent you from doing certain things, but he managed to get into prison. So we did it all. We got him in there.
How was he at the public speaking then? Just speaking very passionately about what he's gone through.
Yeah. Absolutely smashed it. And he was a trace. You could hear a pin drop. Even like the prison guards was like, you know, if they get a bit bolshy, you know, we're going to stop and we're going to pull out the bolshy ones, you know, because obviously he's talking to people that are in there for gang crime and whatever. Yeah. So he just went in there and smashed it. Like, you could hear a pin drop. And even the governor come up to him after and said, we've had people in here speaking about many things over many years. He said, oh, I've never had it so quiet in here where you can actually hear people breathing. You know, like, so he said, they're clearly taking on board what he's saying, and, you know, they invited him back. And
I know he's not full of crap, though, don't they? With the publicity that he's had, they know that he's the what he's speaking.
I just think, like, for somebody to go into somewhere that's got to have the lived experience.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got somebody that's read it from a book and they're going in and they're talking to these young people, it doesn't resonate in them.
No, I'll see through that one as well.
See through, you're just reading it from a script and it's not lived experience. Yeah. So I always think that lived experience is better than somebody that's just reading it from a script or a manual that tells you what you should be saying to them, because it's not always.
But yeah, you wouldn't be surprised then how many lives he has changed going in and speaking to people.
I mean, he did things that I didn't even know about. You know, people contacted me after he passed saying, you know what, he did this for me and he did that. You know, Jimmy lockdown, somebody put on Facebook that the Castle Vale hub has got no stock, it's empty. Next thing is, like, I'm going down the unit to get the van. So we can't really go far, we're in lockdown. He's gone, well, I've got a mate that's going to get me loads of food cheap, and I'm going to go and put it in the hub, because lockdown had happened, people were still struggling, and then there was a lot of people that couldn't get out, they were disabled, so they couldn't get an online delivery that they've had every week for years and years. You couldn't get an online delivery for anything in the world. And they were messaging going, I really had to ask, but I can't get an online delivery. Like, it'd be like, yeah, send over the list to the missus. I'd go and stand outside Morrison's where you had to stand 2 metres apart in the queue to get in, to get their shopping, to take it to them. Mm. And like, he phoned a mate who, we've got a lot of elderly people on the street where we live. And the day that, you know, they come on TV and said they were locking down, I was like, I was a bit like shocked, thinking, you know, we've got a lot of old people here that rely on shopping deliveries or whatever. He's gone off, sorted it. Got a mate coming in a minute. He's going to drop a load of shopping in big baskets on the drive. I said, on the drive? He's gone, yeah, what we're going to do is, my neighbour was on about this the other day, and I did like chuckle to myself thinking, I'll remember that day. This massive van's pulled up. This guy's getting out trays of bread, trays of dairy, like yogurts, and trays of like meat, and he's unloading it all on my drive. And I'm thinking, I've got nowhere to put all this. When he got a double freezer, like, where does he think I put? And it was stacked up. People was walking past looking. So then he's gone, what we're going to do, we're going to empty the baskets into there, and then each house on the street is going to have a basket with fresh bread, milk, orange juice, tea bags, and we're going to make each house up a hamper, and we're going to go and put it on the doorstep. So, all right then. So we're there, and the people are walking past. They're like, right, mate, do you need a hamper? They're like, yeah, boss, yeah. So, like, our front garden that day turned into like a mini market.
Brilliant.
And now, still, my neighbour's got, I'll never forget that day, like, he's rang the bell, he's ran down the path, and I opened the door, and there's like a hamper there. And it was like the first proper day of lockdown. But them are the things that people didn't see, like online, things that he was doing. But it's always the things that people remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of people that won't have any idea that any of that happened, that those were the things that he was involved in. That's nice that there's a platform we can say, this is what
he
did.
The only people that know about that is the people that he'd done it for.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of the people posted up after he passed going, I remember when he did this for me and he helped my child.
But he wasn't necessarily doing it for the sake of shouting about it and being the, oh, look at me.
You know, some people do it and do a video.
Yeah.
He hated all that. He never allowed anybody to video our homeless people. That say, oh, can I come out with you to do outreach? And then be like, well, you can, but you're not filming.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of people like that wanted to try and find the angle for themselves.
Yeah, I could usually pick them out from a crowd.
Mm.
And I used to say straight away, we don't film people, and we'll film the stock to show people that have donated, this is your stock, this is how much we've got this week.
Mm.
Some homeless people would say to Baz, can I have a picture with you? That's fine, because they're asking.
Yeah.
But you're not filming people, because a lot of those homeless people, one, there's a stigma to being homeless. So standing in a queue waiting for a sleeping bag and a coat must be very difficult for them.
Yeah.
Because everybody walking past or going past on a bus knows what you're there for. And two, they're running away from domestic violence, drug abuse. So filming them and putting them on social media is never a good idea, because somebody watching that will go, well, all I've got to do is turn up there next Tuesday and I'll find out.
Vulnerable.
So they're very vulnerable.
Mm.
And then we used to say, like, people in the winter, obviously they want to help more, but the homeless are homeless all year.
It's just moving on. So when Baz passed, it was reminiscent of the Ozzy Osbourne thing, the streets.
Honestly.
It was just how, with the tributes and everything and the murals and the flags and the banner, try and talk us through what you felt.
Honestly, I think the first week, I think I was in shock. Like, there was just like hundreds of people phoning my phone. My phone kept glitching, switching itself off. So if you don't answer the phone to someone, they'll send you a message, go and answer the phone. I can't answer the phone, I can't speak. Like, you're answering the phone, continuing saying the same thing. There's no news, I don't know what happened, I'm waiting for the coroner, all of that. But then the other aspect of it is the amount of people that just left flowers outside my house. Honest to God, every room was full. My friend's a florist. And I was phoning her up going, can I have some buckets for these flowers? Because I don't want them to die. And we've just had more flowers delivered. And they're in the living room, they're in the kitchen, they're in the back room, they're in the back garden in buckets. There was gifts, bears, pictures that they'd just had done in loving memory of Baz. And there were people knocking the door with bracelets that they've made. And honestly, it was like lovely. But it was very overwhelming because but then the other side of it is just random people on the internet are just like.
Well, we were going to touch on that separately, weren't we?
Yeah.
Random people on the internet.
Random strangers would reach out and just be very nice and. And they say, oh, you know, she's not going to read that. I can tell you now, anybody that's lost anybody, whether it's somebody popular like Baz or somebody that didn't have many friends, their grief is the same. But people that are popular, to deal with the overwhelming amount of attention that it brings is hard. I think at one point I was wishing Baz didn't have any friends. You know, it was so hard to try and navigate my way through that. And then the other side of it, just people, strangers, would message and say nice things. And then on the other spectrum, you'll get people that will send you a horrible message. Like, for instance, when Ricky Hatton passed, I can't even comprehend like what his family went through, because the internet was wild. I thought, you know, it was wild when Baz passed, and I found it very overwhelming. So God knows how his family felt. And I seen lovely comments, and then I seen a nasty comment, and I thought, sit on your hands you know, like, don't jump in and say anything, just sit on your hands. Say a lot of my life, I'm thinking, sit on my hand, don't respond.
Or do it, bite your tongue.
Yeah, and then I seen this nasty comment, and then I seen this other guy put, do you really have to put that? His kids could be reading this, and they put underneath, I doubt they'll be reading it. I can categorically tell you, in the dead of night, when the rest of the world is sleeping, and you've lost someone, you will doom scroll on your phone. I don't know why you do it. Maybe you shouldn't do it. And you will come across some nasty, nasty comments. But you will also come across beautiful comments, thousands and thousands of well wishes. For the love of God, try and focus on the good people and not respond to anybody that will sit in their mom's spare room trying to make your life miserable.
It's like a mental illness, isn't it? It's like a compulsion. It's like an attention grab, isn't it? In something where people are awash with nice messages. How do you stand out? Is the only way I look at it.
Yeah.
You must be that desperate to gain any kind of attention.
Any kind of attention. Anything. That you'll jump on the back of a death of somebody. And there's trolls.
Did that Ricky Hatton thing then take you back to...
Yeah. Yeah. Because I just thought, you know, like, his kids, they're older. They will be reading this and it will affect them. And they'll go at a later point in life, it will come back to them that somebody said this. Because it does. No matter how far to the back of your head you push it, it will come back to them. And they'll think, I remember when that guy said this about my dad. And it is horrible. But like I said, there's trolls. There's different levels. There's trolls, attention seekers, and stalkers. And we had them all.
Tell us about that.
We absolutely had them all. And we went from, considering my account has always been private.
So how did that get?
Social media platforms still allow people to inbox you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Whether you read it or not is up to you. But because we were doing our community work, I had no option but to look in my inbox because people could be contacting me regarding donating sleeping bags. So we had no option. Barrington's platform was always open because...
Like a public...
It's a public account.
Yeah.
Because most people will try and contact Baz first and then if they get no joy, you know, because... His account was wild, like you go in his inbox, you'd be like the Wheel of Fortune scrolling, you know, like the messages. So, like, I'd have to check both of our accounts. So, social media doesn't prevent people inboxing locked accounts for a start off. So, I would see the abusive messages sent directly to my accounts. And I'd just block, block, block. And then after like about 4 or 5 weeks, I thought, is this the same person? Same shit grammar, same shit spelling, different named accounts. So I've blocked that account. They've got another one.
Oh, it's multiple accounts, but the same.
Same person. So what I didn't know until the court case, if you get one account blocked or kicked off social media, you can't go back on and set up another one with the same phone number. So these people would have a multiple of SIM cards. So if they've got kicked off or reported.
No, so not even just setting up a new account and everything, you've got to do that. They've got to go and burn a SIM.
It's actual like a full-time job.
Wow.
So after a bit, I was going to Bells. So I started screenshotting the messages. And I said, look, that's the same shit spelling, same shit grammar. This is the same person. And if like, do you think so? And I was like, it is. Then I'd go on to his and it'd be a different name account saying the same thing. And I'd be like, this is the same person. At that point, I didn't know whether it was a woman or a man. So it went on and on and on. So we just kept blocking. And then I think the straw that broke the camel's back was... we went out to do outreach one night and we finished up, packed the van away, got home, pinged on Baz's phone. Oh, you didn't see me tonight. Next time I'll throw acid in her face. Baz was like frantic. He's like, that's it. You don't go out to his house on your own. You have somebody with you at all times. Bearing in mind, at that time, he was working around the country and out of the country. So a lot of the time I was at home on my own. So he's like, no, that stops. Because at that time, we don't know what this person looks like. Do you know what I mean? So I don't even know who I'm looking for.
There's no...
So we'd be at the homeless outreach.
Why?
Yeah. And we'd be looking at people. And we'd be thinking, I had seen them before. And, you know, and it was getting like that. And then I just... You know, Baz and the police, he wouldn't ask them for the time of day. And I was like, you know what? I don't care what you say. This is like mental cruelty. I'm going to the police and I'm going to make them. I'd screenshot everything from when it first started happening. So by now, at this point, probably 8 or 9 months in. And there were some brutal, brutal messages. Pictures of bums and... And I've got it all on my phone still for some reason. Pictures, coffins. Are you ready for your grandchild to die today? And have you got enough to pay for the funerals? And I thought, you know what? This is going to like have a massive effect on my mental health because I don't even know why this person or these people would want to do this. Like, I just could never get my head around it.
I bet you was thinking, who the hell have I upset this much?
And then I was thinking, possible.
Yeah,
is it someone we know?
Yeah.
I was, like, very suspicious, like, looking at the people around us. And I feel bad now for doing that because it wasn't anybody that was around us. It was two people, tandem.
So working together?
Working together from... The same accounts, they were sharing passwords. So one day they'd use that account to abuse me and the next day she'd use that account to send messages to Baz and it was two people. And because I could see the difference, the one day in the spelling and the grammar, I was like, oh my God, she's learned to spell overnight. They said, like, this is a different person, but it's on the account that she messaged me off yesterday. I turned into like an FBI agent. And then I went to the police. To be honest, I don't care. Printed off everything, pictures of bombs, coffins, headstones. Are you ready to die today? So they weren't really fussed. They're not okay, we'll look into it. So then Baz said, we're going to go on holiday. So went on holiday. Sitting at breakfast the next morning, I've got a message. Sent me a picture of my house sitter and said, is your house sitter okay? And I just thought, look, so I'm ringing my house sitter. She's not answering because of the time difference. I'm ringing my neighbours. I'm ringing the police officer that's supposed to be dealing with it, saying, you need to go and check on, like, she's not answering. And, like, I'm getting frantic. I'm overthinking things.
Oh, God, it's like a horror film.
The people that we were on holiday with said, Tracy, like, you read that message and you went white, you know, like, the colour drained out of you. So anyway, we've got hold of our house sitter. And she's like, no, I'm fine. What she'd done, she took the picture the day before. And sent it me that morning to leave me to think something's happened to her that morning. And I'm like, oh God. So I said to Baz, when I get home, I'm going to the police and I ain't moving out the police station until they do something. In between all this, they're messaging Baz's gym, emailing the gym, bombarding the gym. They've found pictures of our grandson. They're sending them me.
No.
With the most horrendous things. Then one night, Baz has gone to work and he worked weekends, Friday and Saturday night. And he's gone to work and I've locked up. And we've up security at home. You know, we've got extra cameras. The back garden's lit up like the football ground. And all of a sudden it's pinged up on my phone and it's a picture of my front door. And it's, do you feel safe in the house on your own? And I thought, so I phoned Baz. So he's going, do not go outside. Do not open the door and go outside. And I'm like, why now? I've got this mad anger that I do want to come outside and fight you because you've got me that mad that you've, like, imposed on our life. Now, like, I'm not even thinking of the consequences. You've just made me that angry. I want to come out and fight you. Like, I'm not even thinking of, you know, what could happen, what the consequences could be. And he's like, do not open that front door. So then it was like, you've got to have someone staying in the house now. So it wasn't just, you can't go out the house on your own now. No, you've got to have somebody with you. Well, I'm not in the house. And it just had such a massive
took a massive...
Why did you get the police at this point?
Still doing nothing. So in the end, we put in a complaint to the police because you've sat on all this information and at this point, nothing's happening. We're still getting terrorised like daily, up to 60, 70 messages a day of different accounts.
Dies?
A day, like horrendous. Of hundreds of different accounts. I don't even know. Like, it's the same person. I'm convinced it's two people now. For one, first I thought it was one, now it's two. So, the one of them changed Baz's Wikipedia page to say he was dead. So, when you make an altercation on Wikipedia, it leaves your IP address. So, I turned into Liam Neeson. You know, the film where he tries to
take
hunt him. Down the people that have trafficked find his you. Daughter.
Yeah.
That's how I am. Like, that's how Baz survived life with me. Because when I get a bee in my bunny, I'm not letting go. I'm getting to it. So anyway, I'm doing all these reversed IP checks and it's took me to this block of four masonettes and...
Oh, so at this point, you haven't even, the police still haven't got involved.
Please end friends up all at this point. You're at
the Columbo.
So, like, I've turned into Liam Neeson and I'm tracking them down and I'm going to doorstep them with a camera crew and I'm going to embarrass the life out of them and I'm going to... Baz is like, going to admit, oh, she's on the case, you know what she's like? When she starts, like, she don't stop. So I've printed it all off. I've gone into the police station, like, fuming now at this point because... My brain is tattered with it all. And I've gone, there you go. That's where the person lives. That's all their accounts. This, you've got all the screenshots of everything they've sent. Bombs, axes, horrendous things like that.
That's all your work that you should have done.
Yeah, had you have sent that to somebody that had been mentally fragile, you would have tipped them seriously over the edge.
Or, God help you, the wait for the inevitable to happen until this person turns up at your door and does something...
And ridiculous. Does something horrendous, like she said she would do. Or here at this point.
Yeah.
So, I've done that. I've come home, I'm fuming. Baz has gone, Trez, you do know, like, I don't care. Like, we're going to have to try and find a way of making them care. So, anyway, the next day he's gone to work and... put my phone on, ding, 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 here we go.
Oh, so just a thing that every day...
Every day I just screenshot everything that's been sent while I've been asleep and print it off for the police and the folders, like these 10,000 messages.
Is it all hours? Is it just going on into the
dead of the night? 16 hours a day, they'll be at it. 16, I look at tag team. I even knew their routine. The one of them on a Tuesday wouldn't message. Like, and I'd think, what are you doing on a Tuesday? Like, I was that scrutinising everything. I knew when they would start, when they would finish, what days, Fridays would be the worst. And I just, like, it's like I went into their life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I went into their world. So Baz gone to work. She sent this picture of a bun. And I thought, you know what? I think at this point, my brain was absolutely frazzled. So I've sent it to Baz and said, oh, you know, today she's not going to chop us up. She's going to blow us up. You know, like it just become.
Yeah. Half a joke.
Yeah. And he went, I've had enough of this. He went, I'll fucking put in a post on my social media about the police. He went, because you know what? They're not helping.
You've got nothing to lose.
So, how long was this from when it started, when you first went in and you're like, can you help us with this?
Probably about a year.
A year?
Yeah. And each week it was getting worse. So he's put this post on his social media saying, West Midlands Police, yet again, I've had to leave work because my wife has received distressing messages, and he screenshot them and put them up. Because you failed to act on all the information that you have, and you're leaving my wife vulnerable. I'm telling you, I'll post about these every single day until you do something. So, on the evening, the police have phoned me.
No.
Yeah. Can you come down to the police station? Baz would not want to step in the police station for the tea in China. But he's like, I'm coming with you. I'm like, listen, don't come in there shouting and like, if they're going to help us now, because you forced their hand, and they're going to help us, then all well and good. But don't come in there.
Get yourself into trouble.
Get yourself into trouble. And I come out there on my own, and you're like 12 hours in a cell because you've lost your head. I understand why you're angry, because we're both going through this together, and it's horrible, and it's taken its toll. So we've gone down there, and they've gone, all right, Barrington, can you take that message down? You went, no.
That was the first thing.
That was all the ones he does down there for.
No.
He went, no. He said, well, you know, like the communications and whatever, the laws. Baz went, no. It's true. What I've put up is true. It's not like I posted a lie about
the laws about like the communication laws that you've been giving them information for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. About malicious communications. Yeah.
So any of that, what I've put up is not a lie. So I ain't taking it down. In fact, I'm going to put another one up tomorrow. I was thinking, Baz, don't wind them up. Like, I've come here thinking they're going to help us. And so I'll put one up every day, every time. Every morning when my wife wakes up to horrendous messages, I'm going to screenshot them and I'm going to post them up and I'm going to tag you in it. And I'm going to do it every day. And I'm thinking, but stop winding him up, like, because he now looks like he's got the wave in him. Like, it's going to go one way or the other. So anyway, he stormed out there with a bee in his bonnet, Baz. And he's like, no, I'm not having it. They're quick enough knocking my door, which is entirely true. Because before we caught the people that was doing this to us, somebody said something to Baz on Facebook once. And all Baz said was, would you have that energy if I come round and knocked your front door? Would you have the energy to say that if I knocked your front door? I'm not lying. I've got a video on my phone and I'll show you before I leave. Within 24 hours, the police came to our house with a banning order for Baz from approaching the guy that said something to him on social media. I'll show you the video before I leave. West Midlands Police have read out this order to him on the front doorstep and said, you're not allowed to go to this person's address.
He had no intention of going anywhere.
He had no intention of going. He just said to him, would you have the same energy if I was on your front doorstep than you have on the internet? He never swore, he never threatened to do anything. But you're at my front door. I've give you an evidence bundle this big. And because he said that to somebody, this is what happens with trolls. They'll post up the most horrendous things day in, day out. 99% of it's not true, but they just like the attention that it brings. God forbid you ever say anything back to them because they claim alarm and distress and run straight to the police. I'll show you before I leave here today at least two incidents. Video where the police have come, and it's just mental.
For a year of alarm and distress.
Yeah. So time went on. In the end, we put in official complaint, and the case was given to Nottinghamshire Police, who have their own stalking unit. And I'll forever be grateful for Nottinghamshire Police. I came the next day. They downloaded, at this point, nearly 10,000 points of contact from my phone, my iPad, Baz's iPad. They had the IT people in my house downloading everything. And a wonderful officer who was part of the dedicated stalking team. And people who think it's just hurty words on the internet, it isn't hurty words on the internet. It's, you're taking pictures of our house, you're taking pictures of our car, you're claiming to be where we are and sending pictures. So you're having a massive impact on our life. It's not hurty words. It's
gone beyond that, hasn't it?
It's moved on a lot from there. So then a couple of days later, I'd done a statement to them about how it all started and how it's affecting our day-to-day life, affecting the charity. We had to keep locking the charity page because they just bombarded it with abuse. And then a couple of days later, she phoned me and she said, we know who they are. And I was like, that? Because I did think, but I couldn't be sure, that it was two people. And it is two people, and they live in different parts of the country, but they communicate with each other. So we're going to be making, tomorrow morning, early morning,
door knocks. And they're both going to be arrested at the same time. Different parts of the country. So this, I'll never forget, this is like a Tuesday night. So right up until I went to bed.
Is that like Christmas Eve for you then?
I just like, at this point, I'm thinking I'll believe it when it happens. Yeah, because I've been through ups, downs. I'm just like, when you ring me tomorrow and tell me you've got them, then I'll breathe a sigh of relief. So anyway, the night before, they're messaging. And I'm thinking, you're getting locked up tomorrow. You know, so I'm sitting in my back room with Baz and I'll go, they're getting locked up tomorrow. I really hope they're getting locked up. So next morning, their doors have come off at 6 o'clock in the morning. 8:30, the officers rang me. And she's gone, oh, the night before, sorry, the officers rang me. She's gone, we're all ready for tomorrow, you know. It's a big day for you tomorrow. Try and get some sleep. I know you like you haven't slept well. And I haven't slept well. I think he's got a petrol bomb my hands. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the, understanding.
That said things like, we're going to put petrol through your letterbox. So, like, you know, all that. Like, I haven't slept properly for such a long time. So, anyway, the next morning, they rang me and said, like, you know, we've got two people in custody. And the first thing I said to them is, do we know them? Like, I know they're in other parts of the country, but we know people all over the planet.
Yeah.
Or do they know us? And she said, I can't really tell you much, but no, they don't. And the one that we arrested from Nottingham had something like 80-something SIM cards and hundreds of pictures of yourself, Barrington, your grandchild. And she's the more prolific one out of the two. I think the other one just went along, wasn't. They're both as bad as each of
them. Oh, that met on a message board or something.
What? Yeah, they just must have had a shrine dedicated. All their iPads was full of like our pictures and screenshots of this and our wedding pictures, you know. We've been married years. How have you even found a wedding picture? You've gone down Baz's friends list, found his friends, gone on their pages, found pictures from weddings and pictures of Barrington's brother who passed away years ago. Honestly, you're just brutal. So anyway, she's gone. It's going to be a long day. Interviews are going to take hours. I'm just glad, like, you've got them at this point. So our solicitor is saying to us now, they better not get bail. Because if they get bail, like, there is going to be an uproar. So anyway, they got bail. And I'm thinking, oh my God, like, they've got bail. Like, I've known people do a lot less and not get bail.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So they got bail.
I assume the messages then just stopped dead once they've been nicked. On that day, obviously.
Yeah, so after that, they were on bail and they had strict bail conditions not to come to Birmingham, not to contact me directly.
Yeah, clear.
Not to contact any of the family, not to contact Barrington's job, all the things that they'd done you not to do. And it went on for ages and ages, going to court. He's been adjourned for Crown Court because it's stalking. But in between all that, there's very little that the police can tell you because there's a trial.
Yeah.
So when she said they've got bail, she said, what I'm going to do is I need somebody to come around to your house and talk to you and assess your house to tell you how to get out. Should there be a fire? And I went, what? She said, but they're on bail. She's gone, I know, but there's certain things we can't tell you, but we're going to arrange for this to happen. So anyway, this guy come round who was from the fire service. And I forget, at this point, now it's near Christmas. Christmas tree's up. And he's saying to me, should anybody put petrol through the letterbox, we can fit a metal box on your back of your door so the flames don't spread. And if you're upstairs, don't climb out onto the glass roof at the back of the house. We're only like in Garrett's Green. We could be here in 4 minutes. And I'm thinking, why is he telling me all this? You know, look, he's making me feel.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Look, they're on bail. Why is he telling me all this? Like,
so you haven't got anyone parked out keeping an eye on them, but they've got to come round and tell you what might happen.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, and I'm saying to Baz, they must have uncovered something really drastic to have these people round here telling us what to do and how to get out and put wet towels by the door and try and stay in one room and don't open the windows and all that. So I'm thinking, oh, so it's just turning.
So it's not over. You thought it was
over. It's not over. So then people are going, oh, she must have done something before for them to be this worried about you. And like, have she got bail? So anyway, it went on and went on, come to the court case. So then the police are saying, what we're going to do is we're charging them separately and we're going to put them on trial separately. Because if we put them together, they're going to blame each other. And one of them are going to end up getting off because that's what will happen. So you're going to have to face two trials. By now, I am like mentally and physically worn out with it all.
But at the same time, I imagine thinking,
at the
fuck
time,
it, I'm gone, we're having it.
I'm thinking, come on, like, this is the last hurdle. So on the day of the trial, the first one, who was the more prolific one, the more dangerous one, who then turned out had previous history for stalking and some things that I wouldn't even want people to think about. So she's first. So we've gone, I'm prepared, I've got to give evidence. So we've got there, she's changed her plea to guilty. I haven't got to give evidence, but I have got to stand up and read out my victim impact statement and drum it into her thick head. How you have terrorised our life, turned it upside down, and you don't even know us. Well, we've never done anything wrong to you. You don't know us. You found us on the internet.
So what was that more than seeing her?
You know, like, I was looking at her. She did not look bothered. That would have been me, standing there, ready to be sentenced. I would have been petrified. She just kept smirking, looking around the room. You know, even her barrister couldn't even say, why she done it? He couldn't even, you know, usually they'll stand up and try and justify
something.
He couldn't, like, he just said, look, I don't even know what, he basically said, I don't even know what to say. And then the judge just said to him, you can sit down because you won't be leaving here today. And I looked at Baz and I went, she's going to prison, Louis. She's actually going to prison. And Baz went, listen, I ain't believing that till I see the top of her head going down the upstairs. So I done my victim impact statement. Her barrister stood up for 20 seconds because really what could he say to justify her behaviour, and she got 3 years. Didn't bother her. She wasn't upset in any way. And amazingly enough, her mental health assessment that she had showed that she wasn't mental. I'll always find that difficult to understand, because for you to get up and spend 16 hours a day tracking our life, taking pictures, screenshots and whatever, there's got to be something wrong with you to dedicate 16 hours of your day to the life of two strangers that you've never even met.
I suppose for you, that's better, isn't it? Because, you know, she's being tried as a mentally well person.
Yeah, but so I was always convinced that you'd definitely been mentally unwell to be doing that. Do you know what I mean? Like, no normal people would get up and think, whose life can I destroy today on the internet? Like, I'll never understand that. Then the second person.
What was what was kind of the timeline between the first trial and the second trial?
A matter of weeks, like I think about 6 weeks.
Right.
So the main one, who the police said was the worst one, she's locked up now. She's doing 3 years. So I'm not really worried about petrol coming through the letterbox, and because she was the main person. So then the second one, who I just think was, I don't even know if she was mentally unwell. They said she wasn't, but that's another one I'll never understand. We've gone to the trial. She changed her plea on the day and even brought her bag. She did go to prison. She got a 15-month suspended sentence with a lifetime banning order from contacting me, Barrington, the charity. So I just thought, you know what? It is what it is. She had no previous. But then the banning order was for life from both of them.
So I was like, well, there is that, you know, we've got that. So anyway, after the trial, I think the trial was around like probably the November 21, moving into 2022 now, but Baz passed away in March. And I remember that morning when he passed, I remember sitting there and having it come into my head at the worst time, she's going to start contacting me because I know she can't help it. I know this banning order, she can't help herself. It's like a
obsession.
Yeah, she's obsessed. And the next thing, ding, 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 ding. At this point now, I'm not even trying to answer my phone because there's too many people ringing. So then my friend come and knocked the door and she went, Trace, you need to phone the police. So what are you about? She's back and she's posting. And when I looked, she contacted me. You know what? So I phoned the police. But lucky enough, I didn't have to go through West Midlands because if I did, I'd still be waiting. I phoned the police in the area where she lived and said, I've got a court order. My husband's passed away today. She's broke the court order. I'm really fragile.
This was my day.
Yeah, I'm fragile. Please go and arrest her because I'm that fragile. I feel like I'm going to go to her house. Like, I've got this mad anger that you've even got the audacity to do what you've done and now start again today. So they've gone, no, don't worry, don't worry. So they phone me back on the night. They've gone, we've arrested her. And I'm thinking about God for that because I just could not deal with her. And all this at this time. So they've gone, we've charged her for breaking the court order and communications and stalking again. So we've got a trial now. Whether the trial's happening before the funeral or after the funeral. So I'm thinking, just plead guilty. Just please, like, everybody knows what you've done. The police can see you've done it. Don't waste people's time saying you haven't done it. They've checked all the accounts, they match the IP. The IP comes back to your address. Come on, don't make me do this. So now I haven't got Baz to come to the trial with me this time around. So me and my friends have gone and she's walked in and I've looked at the judge and thought, oh, that's the same judge that gave her the 15-month suspended back. He ain't going to be happy that you're back here. You know, like, that was the only bit of comfort. I looked at him and I thought, you're going
to
be
like... It's not someone new has to go through and relive everything. And
yeah.
A little bit of embarrassment for him, hopefully, that he's when he says he's from
she stood up. I thought the trial's going to start. A barrister stood up and gone, she wants to change her plea to guilty. I thought, thank God for that. So the judge went, smile, well, you can sit down because you won't be leaving here today. I thought, I've heard that before.
Mm.
So she was given 15 months prison. And the lifetime order stays in place.
Right.
Whether she'll ever, I don't even know. I keep things private.
But even jumping forward to the stuff that we've seen with that lad and stuff, like, what is people's, you know, this lad that you pulled when I met him? But
you know
what is the fascination?
A whole different spectrum, though.
Yeah.
But that is some young lad who's out with his mates on the other.
Right. It's a blues. Was it a Blues Villa thing or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So it.
But again, it's still the same.
Yeah, no, we've got fans that are stupid.
Yeah.
Every club has got stupid fans. No matter what club it is, we've had a few stupid ones, let's not forget, who have done stupid things. So that morning, I've got up and there's loads of messages. Alice in this, find out where he lives. And I'm thinking, oh, God's sake. Looked and thought, so yet again, my head's gone. Where usually, I'll just, not today, Satan. I'll just get on with my day.
Yeah.
But sometimes other people sending it, wind you.
Yeah, riles
you. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I thought, I've got to find him now and just... So anyway, by about 9 o'clock in the morning, I'd found him. Through his own stupidity, I found him. So, because he sent this message...
gone home drunk, gone to bed. He's not deleted it. I've got on. I find your works phone number off your van in your pictures. I find your mum. I know. Yeah.
You're a freaking pro at this. Right, he's messed with the right person, isn't
it? I found, like, I told you I'm like Liam Neeson. When people wind me up, I'm on it. So I phoned him up. Didn't answer. Left him a voice note. I'm not even going to say his name because him out because he turned out to be a really decent.
I see. I saw the video. It was just. He recruited to meet you.
So I phoned him up, went, left him a voice note. All right, round the corner from your house. I prefer it if you come round and see me because I don't want to knock you down and embarrass you in front of your family. I could see he's got a young family. Me, I would not bring this to your door and embarrass you where other people would land. Mob handed people, as his friends are ringing.
I assume he's got away. We want to know.
They're ringing me and they're going, "You're not going to meet him on your own. Where are you?" And I'm like, "Listen, I'm fine. I'm a big girl. No, you're not meeting him. Send us where you are." And I'm like, "Listen, I need to go and speak to this kid. It's no good us all preaching. Like, when our fans do this, we step in and try and show them the right way. But then when somebody does it to us, go around there and boot the front door off. It doesn't work like that. You either have the same rule for everybody or you just don't do anything." So anyway, eventually he's rang me back. He's gone, "Oh, all right, it's me, blah, blah." And I've gone, "All right, do you want to come around? Like, I'm parked here, like, do you want to come meet me?" He's gone, "Who are you with?" I said, "Just me and my niece, who's a female, and we know how to fly." I said, "But I need to speak to you because I want to show you the light because I'm saving you here, mate, because there's a lot of people that want to come around here and take your door off." And Vanessa was all for, at that point, you know, doing the right thing by people. I'm not undoing all the work that we've done by losing my head and coming around here and kicking off, because that will make me just as bad as you. Even though I'm angry and I'm upset. So we've met up and I've said to him, like, you know, I can't even tell you reading this, like, what it does to me when, you know, I have this all the time and it does affect me. And he's like, "I'm really sorry." And I've gone, "And I'm looking at your account. You've got a young family, a partner, and you're still young. You're that stupid that you don't think something like this could ruin you in the future." He's gone, "I just didn't think, you know, I'm out with my mates and I've typed it and they go, send it, send it." I said, "And that's what happens. Like, they're drinking, they're on there all day, or they're watching the game. They want to be smart. And then in the cold light of day, you're stood here on your own because your mates ain't come with you because they don't want to come because I think that there's going to be a load of people waiting.
I'm going to be associated with that.
It's safer, mate, for you to be standing here with me because I'm not like that. I'm trying to do things the proper way." And he turned into a real nice guy. And I'm like, "You know what? We shook hands, we hugged, a few tears." And I'm like, "You've got a young child, you know, you don't really..."
It's like the illness of social media in a nutshell, isn't it?
It's wild. It's absolute wild.
But how powerful that message was then, once you put it out on social media, was... there's not even a quantifier it, that if the lads were to go around and do it another way, it wouldn't have been as powerful as you going around and him being all like, and you just being that calm person saying, "Listen, this is what it is," and him just being all like...
Well, that's it, because we'd already had dealings with one of our own fans that had put some up bad online.
Yeah.
And by stepped in and, you know, dealt with him and made him do a written apology to the person. And he went to court for it and he was punished, which I find bizarre because you acted on that within 24 hours of one person. Not that I condone it, but one person sent a bad message to a professional footballer and he was arrested and charged in 24 hours. And I've got 10,000 messages of two raving lunatics.
Yeah.
You can see, like, where I'm coming from.
Your head must be like scrambled? Just
the, you know, like, and I'd say, oh, look, so-and-so has been arrested for doing one message in a drunken moment. And I've
given, yeah, calculated, like, campaign.
I've got 10,000 messages of them threatened to blow me up, throw acid in my face, chop me up.
And you wonder then how long that would have been without the social media prompts from Baz anyway.
Yeah. Oh,
if you hadn't have pulled him in and...
It would have gone on and on and on and on.
So the sheer embarrassment of doing nothing is what kind of forced the hand.
And then another force to take over the case.
Yeah.
So in the end, you know, the second one, she got 15 months. She's out now. I'd like to think that she'll turn it around. Even in my, you know, put my statement that I read out to the courts, the second person, I said I would like to think that she would, like, become a better person and not be that vile for the rest of her life, because if she does stay on that road, she's going to probably end up spending most of her adult life in prison. And she was only, like, I think she's, like, in her 28. Right. The other one was, like, in her 40s. I don't understand, like, grown women, you're getting up in the morning, keyboard warrior.
It must be an obsession, a whole...
Yeah, I just, like, while they're doing all that keyboard warrior nonsense, I'm out here trying to make a difference in the community that I live in and that the community that Barrington loved. So while you're doing your keyboard warrior nonsense, I'm out here doing something more positive.
Mm. Yeah, you could take them out 10 hours that you're sitting at a computer sending spurious...
Was there any kind of motive explained during the situation? Well, they have had, if they just picked it up,
you guys have. His conclusion with the worst one was her life was that miserable that she sat in this one bedroom property and found people who were popular with the community to harass and stalk, because for some unknown reason, we're not even bolshy and showy people, but she obviously thought we had a better life than her. And obviously they want to make your dad as bad as theirs.
Because you're out helping the community. Because you're out
doing stuff in the community. That's
worse than picking out like a footballer or an American footballer, yeah, so a basketball star, isn't it? And
yeah. So they always pick on a big account, which was Barrington's, because it's a lot of followers and it's open. And then they'll look and they'll go, even though I haven't got Facebook, they'll go, oh, that's his wife. Then they'll Google, yeah, and they'll see pictures, and then they'll come and find you, and then they'll start inbox you, and then it just thought, you know what? Out of them 10,000 messages, I only ever responded once off all of them accounts.
What was that, one of the first ones?
No, it was one of the later ones where I was, like, coming, feeling fragile, coming just... Probably
like a pleading one. So what? No, what? Or just
it was about a month really... before them was arrested.
Right.
And I always tried this sit on your hands, and I say it to everyone.
You've done well. 10,000 messages in the
sit back on of your one. Hands, you know, ignore them. Don't give them the platform to air their nonsense and all that. And she just tipped me over the edge one morning, and I've just typed back, and I put, "You better hope that I never land on your doorstep, because the whole world is going to see you for what you are." Because at that point, I'm thinking, right, get some of these lads that do the blogging. I know the block where she lives now because I've done my Liam niece and stuff. And I can tell by the people coming in and out, you get a pretty good judge of character of who's likely to be hurt. And I'll find who it is. And I used to lie in bed at night thinking, I need to do that because no one's helping me. So I answered that one time, but I could have kicked myself. Because for all of that time, I sat on my hands, even the worst messages, the worst.
No, you're better than most.
I could have kicked myself for just that one time that I've answered you. And I've just, like, I felt like they'd won. Must have answered. Whereas, whatever. So the court orders are still in place.
Moving forward, did they give you support? Did they give you advice? Or is there advice that they have set? Is any laws changed surrounding it? Or is anything moved forward? Because
Did anything come of the compliance? Did you get an apology?
Yeah.
No, I got no apology.
No.
You never do, do you?
No. But what would be your advice now to someone else sitting in your position?
That I spoke about in my victim impact statement to the court is the social media platforms allowing people to make multiple accounts.
Without any form of ID?
Without ID.
Yeah.
Had anything like that been in place at that time, we wouldn't have had to go through a quarter of what we went through. And I just think, in general, it keeps people safer.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people now that let their young children online. You don't know who you're talking to. The person in the picture is not who you're talking to. You know, there's got to be something there to protect vulnerable children. And there's vulnerable adults out there that get...
1,000,000%.
Catfished and all that sort of thing.
Well, the ID thing would be a double-edged sword, wouldn't it? So it'd... within 5 minutes, you'd know who the account was.
Yeah.
But then it'd make them think twice to think about writing
these
something.
These social media account platforms are in San Francisco. So there's a procedure that you have to go down to apply for the account owner's details.
Yeah.
So in our case, they had to do that over 100 times for different accounts.
Yeah.
They're coming back to pay-as-you-go phone numbers.
Yeah. And that's another thing, isn't it? Pay-as-you-go stuff or burner phones.
Just like, so who in the right mind?
Who's got all that time? Yeah. You know, I can't even remember my password to my Instagram.
No.
So how you remember all the passwords to all of them accounts that you've set up to impose on our life on a day-to-day basis?
This is a sorry operation. How have you got that? The organisation, like you say, talk about misuse skills.
Yeah.
Things you could be doing with those skills, but you're organising SIMs, phones, accounts.
And I think when the press do an article regarding these stalkers, I think sometimes they're lazy. They don't actually put in because you pair look shocked. I'm talking to you and I'm looking at you. And you're, you know.
Well, I looked too. So when I was...
You look a bit shocked that you're thinking, well, I never knew that.
No, because I read up on the cases, but there's no indication in the newspaper reports that they were linked.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I was saying to him, no, there was two different women.
Yeah,
there were. Mm. There's no
Yeah, that's what I mean, because they happened in different Crown Courts as well.
But yeah, so no one's even asked the question. Oh, well, this person...
Well, they never spoke to me. What they do is they go... So... The trial was in Nottingham, so it would be Nottingham Press that report from the courts. And then Birmingham Live will jump on it.
Would no one actually approach you?
No, they don't.
Birmingham Live? No.
They're just like, they'll do a story and go, message me and go, oh, we're doing a story and so far we've done this, this and this. And I'm like...
So you got all the newspaper coverage. So I know for Baz's fight in Coventry... Yeah. It was publicised. They loved that, didn't they? That there were Zulus there and the blind Zulus for fighting after the fight.
Yeah.
But this thing that went on for a year, no one said, would you like to put your side forward?
No. It's bizarre, isn't it?
It's what they want to...
Do you know what? So on a more positive note...
Yes, please. Bit of positive.
Yeah. So the charity work that you're doing now, obviously, since Baz's passing, you've been very vocal and you've been very proactive with the defibrillators, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got number 5 just gone out in memory of Dan Duffy outside the Big Bull's Head. Lovely, lovely guy. And very supportive and good friends, myself and Barrington. And his mother-in-law and his partner very kindly give me permission to have one outside with both their pictures on. So we've done that a couple of weeks ago. And that's in a good place, Digbeth, big football pub, lots of people around. So that's number 5 that's gone on. The Food Bank Emporium Gym, busiest time of the year now. If you can support in any way, drop in a donation at the gym or contact yourself.
Yeah.
Or if you're on my Instagram.
Well, we'll put all the, put some links on.
Contact me and we plan on doing a big Asda shopping delivery. And we always do it in memory of Baz, birthdays, Christmas, anniversaries. Food banks open every Tuesday anyway. But on special occasions, we try and bump up the donations to get the food bank fully stocked in time for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We do that. We've got the We do the Barrington Paterson Community Champion Award. Todd, a friend of ours who's dedicated years and years to teaching young children boxing, all voluntary, down the gym twice a week, takes the kids around the country fighting, is the person to receive this year. So he got that last week and he was all overwhelmed with that.
Brilliant.
We've got the Barrington Paterson Memorial Boxing Bout, is the current holder who's not letting go of it anytime soon. Tommy Inch takes it everywhere. He's not letting go of that.
We tried to get him on.
Yeah.
Mr. Hench.
Yeah.
He will come on at some point. It's just he's a busy guy.
Barrington reffed a few of Tommy's fights and advised him. And, you know, when he first started becoming popular, Barrington sat down with Tommy and said, look, Tom, take it from me, someone that knows, you need to be doing this, 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 and this, and none of that. And Tommy spoke about that after and said, I'll never forget the advice. One of the last fights that Baz reffed for Tommy, as Tommy and this guy was having internet beef and it was back and forth, I'm coming round your house. Baz said, no one's going round anyone's house. But got him in the ring. Some dodgy little place with a ring. And he threw him in the ring and said, scrap it out. Don't come out till you're finished. No one's going around knocking anyone's door. Misses and kids are there.
It's a lost art, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just having a punch up.
We're not having it. So, like, they had a scrap. And that was it. They went separate ways and it stopped. Because I think sometimes the internet can fuel situations and make them much worse than, you know, like other people jumping on and the hype and all that. And that's what's happening now with these young people that are online. They've always got to post something better than the next person.
Yeah.
So they'll post something that's going to raise the bar.
Inflammatory.
We've had some this week, and I've seen it was continuing last night. I haven't even spoke to you about this. And there's two lads, and it's about an article, a clip that we've put on, and they're offering each other out by the Asda, by the 4097, and I'm here and this, that, and the other, and I'm coming down London next week, and I'm reading through the comments. I just feel like saying, like, lads.
How old are you all?
Like, it's like, when watching it on hit, it's just a clip of that's your point of view, but why are you going to get yourself
get
in trouble?
That deep into internet life. Look, your internet life is nothing like your real life. I look at people that I know that are on social media and I think.
Yeah, different persona entirely.
Darren, like your internet life and your real life. And
people take it too seriously, don't they? It's not serious, but.
It can make you or break you.
Yeah.
The internet.
Oh, gotcha.
If you're not internet savvy and try and be like proactive and, you know, raise awareness and all the things that you should be doing.
And don't be horrible. Be kind.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
If you've got a massive platform, you know, I see people with massive platforms that make revenue from their account. Bazard had done that. We'd be millionaires. He never. People are contacting him and go, right, Baz, started a T-shirt business. Will you wear one of my T-shirts? These influencers now will go, yeah, for $2,000 and a picture. Baz is like, yeah, pop one in the post to the wife. I'll get a swine in it. I'll wear it down the football.
Yeah.
I'm like, Baz, like that.
Stop then, yes.
That.
Yeah. Charge.
Got about Baz. 500 T-shirts.
You should charge Baz $2,000, so aren't it?
Yeah.
Nothing revert.
We've got about 500 T-shirts now.
Yeah.
Because you always say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not a bad thing, but when you look at people now and you think, how do you get away with charging people to put a post up or wear an item of clothing? How do you even get away with that? Well, people actually make a living from it.
Just the amount of eyes that
are. Whereas Bass would it. Like, yeah, put me one in the post. And
yeah.
Well, they're saying this morning that the Oxford Dictionary, the word of the year is rage bait. That is the word of the year from the Oxford Dictionary.
Brilliant.
Tells you everything.
So just finally then, so if you could kind of send one message to the people of Birmingham about Baz's legacy and about the charity work you're doing. And it's not, and again, he was very blues orientated, but I've seen Blues, Villa, Wolves, West Brom. It's a community thing that it's not just a blues thing.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you want as your...
I have messages off all football clubs.
Of course,
you know, ex-players have reached out. And obviously, I'm not going to do name dropping because it's not something that you do. But they've all been really kind and supportive in, you know, me going forward and trying to keep Baz's legacy going, really. And, you know, so it all doesn't go to waste, because he still had so much more that he wanted to do that obviously he can't do now, but I'll try and do it for him. So it's really just we've got amazing people out there doing work with knife crime. We've got Birmingham Says No. Alison Cope, she's doing amazing work going into schools and colleges talking about gang crime. Got Lynn Baird and the Daniel Baird Foundation. I'm doing a bit. If we all do a little bit, is better than everybody doing nothing. We're doing the food bank, as I said, at Emporium Gym. Baz's gym. Baz love food.
Hand in hand, isn't it?
Yeah. He would want to feed the community like he has done. You know, he's gone out there more than once, like I said, and dropped food parcels, helped him out. I just want to keep all of that going. And it is very difficult. I do understand we're in a cost of living crisis and times are hard than they've ever been before. But since Baz is not here, it's much harder to raise awareness because, like I said, my social media is locked. And it's locked for a reason.
Yeah.
Mainly to protect myself and my own mental health, because I couldn't put up with that day in, day out. I'm very fragile, I'm much more fragile than I used to be. So really, just the food bank, you know, go out and do a bit of something. You know, if everybody does a bit, then it's better than everybody doing nothing.
Well, again, we'll put all the links out, but just want to say thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
Been a bit of an eye-opener, hasn't it? Because, you know, nobody...
I spent the last hour like this. My Botox top-up's going to cut the fortune.
You just... I'm looking at you and you're just like...
But there's only so much research you can do, though, without you actually saying, well, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
But no. How fragile you are. Like 99% of people would have buckled inside that whole scenario. Mm. You've been able to come out the other side. You're still doing the work. Still strong enough to carry on Baz's legacy.
I'm just stubborn.
After that.
Yeah. I'm just stubborn as... I mean, I'm one of these people that think, you know what? Baz would be saying, puff your chest out, head up and carry on.
The world would be a better place for the more people like you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.